The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Monday, May 13th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Alongside me, as always, on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, is Uncle T-Bone. Great to have you back, your favorite uncle in the studio once again. We were talking about it with the craziness that has been over the last couple of weeks with your other job and me doing high school sports and everything like that. Our shows have been a little sporadic, but as of right now, everything seems to be back to normal. Happy Monday, man.
Happy Monday. Spectre, my man, don't hate on us for having to miss the radio show, brother. We're back. We are here for you. We are back, Jacob, and couldn't feel better about it. So give us a call, 334-321-1390 here at On the Line, the show that tells it like it is and holds nothing back, ESPN 106.7. It's been a wild couple of weeks. High school sports finally beginning to wind down for both Auburn High and Lee Scott.
Yeah, both of those have officially been wrapped up in our sports coverage, with softball losing in the Auburn High, softball losing in the regional tournament, Auburn High baseball losing in the state semis, and then my ride, of course, Lee Scott. We went down on Friday in Montgomery and fell just short in the state championship series.
Yeah, it's just a tough break for the Warriors going down to Glenwood, and then more Phoenix City flavor in Central. The old Red Devils over there taking out Auburn in baseball. Unfortunate early end to the rest of the season. Well, for his career, Coach Simo over at Auburn.
Legend.
Step down. Complete legend.
32 years at the helm of Auburn High baseball.
That's incredible. Multiple state championships and, you know, and all in all, a very successful run. For sure, a very successful season. You know, obviously, everyone wants to win the state championship, but that's a program that has a championship mentality just like Lee Scott and will continue to with whoever takes over. So congratulations to all those sports, all the families, and all the support of the local community. It was a great ride. I can't say that I'm not glad, though, to be back in studio with you and calm down. My man over here across from me in the studio has been just grinding his heart and life away, and one of the hardest workers out there that I know, not just in radio. So, Jacob, glad to be back. We get to have some fun now. It's kind of the silly season, the
off
season, the what-if season.
Yes.
And there's some breaking news, but before we get to that real quick, I got to give a shout-out to one of our local partners.
Uh-oh.
In Sensible Green Solutions. Did you know that's what SensiGreen stands for?
Sensible?
I did not. Sensible Green Solutions, which I love. SensiGreen.
Dico's never told me that.
Yeah, for air that's cool and clean, you better call SensiGreen. Listen to this, Jacob. So Thursday night, we had a little bit of bad luck over there at the Bennett household, and the air went out.
Oh, no.
And I noticed a little water beginning to get into the ceiling.
And it was hot late last week.
And it was hot. And I was like, there's a problem. So I got up there, and, you know, I'm no HVAC technician by any means, but I knew we had an issue when I saw that water in the pan. And I called my man, Jeff DeCoto, the French Indian from Boston MA.
Yes.
He is one of the head honchos over there at SensiGreen and a good friend to the show and a good friend of ours and ESPN 106.7. Had somebody get out there. They couldn't get out there. They were so busy. But they were working at 9 o'clock on Thursday night over at my house.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
How about that?
Diagnosed the issue, said, you know, Uncle T, we got an issue. We're going to have to get this part in. I'm sorry. They've cleaned everything up for me. The next morning, they call me up and like, we've got multiple portable air conditioners coming. We're going to set them up. And they ran them all weekend because this part's a little hard to come by right now, as a lot of things are in the supply chain, and just have taken care of me and my family. Check them out at SensiGreen.com. give them a call. Tell them Uncle T-Bone and Jacob Goen sent you over there. And I just cannot – those are the type of people we're partnering up here and
that's
proud
right.
to do so. So please give Sense of Green a shot out there. They're good people. They take care of me, and that's my personal testimonial
Boom.
For them.
Yeah, well, we appreciate them, of course, helping you out and then being a partner with On the Line with ESPN 106.7 and so many great things that we do here at Auburn Network. So, yeah, shout out Sense of Green. Great people over there. So sounds like you had a pretty sporadic weekend, and happy belated Mother's Day to all of those celebrating yesterday. I know I made all my rounds of phone calls yesterday. Unfortunately, I don't have any of my mom or grandmothers or anything locally, but I do, make the calls. And I was telling you, my mom's actually going to be making a trip down next week, so
awesome.
Looking forward to seeing her. So happy Mother's Day to any of you out there and all your lovely mothers. But as he mentioned, 334-321-1390, that's the number to get you through to us. Man, we got all sorts of things to talk about on the show today, and we do have some breaking news. We're going to get to it as we go, probably at 2:30, because I do want to get in baseball, softball conversation to get the show rolling. But we have SEC opponents for Auburn basketball, SEC basketball for 2024 and 2025. So really excited for that. And remember, this is a new look now. This is a new look SEC with two more opponents are on that schedule. And I'll go ahead and tell you, give you a little snippet of it. One's at home and one's away, okay? So we'll talk about that coming up in about 20 minutes or so. But Uncle T-Bone, Auburn baseball, first SEC series win of the year. It took till the second to last weekend to do it, but the Tigers, man, they get it done. They get a win on the road at Missouri this weekend.
Yeah, here we go. Good job, Auburn baseball. Should have got the sweep.
You can make that argument.
Up by five late on Friday and just have a massive meltdown, allow Missouri to come back and win 12-11. But the Tigers rebound well. They win 12-2 on Saturday, May the 11th, and on Sunday, May the 12th, on Mother's Day, take care of business and take out Missouri for their first conference series win, two out of three, and they win the game 9-7 at Missouri, going on the road and getting a series win. And man, I couldn't be more proud of them. I know it's been a really tough season over there for our Tigers. They've had pitching woes and they've had hitting woes, and they seem to come in batches where the hitting's great and then the pitching doesn't pan out, or vice versa, or all of the above. It's an extremely difficult conference that Auburn plays baseball in, but this is the world we live in the SEC. So they're going to have to get better, and it's late season series wins when you really have nothing to play for other than pride that I think you can build on, Jacob.
Yeah, and you look at it, and it's been a tough year all the way around, offensively, defensively, pitching. I mean, it's just been a rough year. But Auburn went down and continued to play and to grind, and in that final game of the series, I believe they had a 7-1 lead before they watched that dwindle away and had to scrape by a win to get the series win. And yes, that Missouri team is not very good. They are the second to worst team ranking wise in the SEC, but Auburn got it done. They were able to get a win and build some momentum. They play Samford coming up tomorrow. I believe that's a Hoover Met, and then they welcome Alabama to the Plains this weekend for the final series of the year, the final games of the year, because Auburn baseball is officially eliminated from all postseason play. They will not be in Hoover playing at the SEC tournament, and they will not be playing in any sort of NCAA postseason. And it is in the Hoover Met, because I believe Jacob Hillman was telling us this last week that Auburn baseball does this every year. They play one of their late midweek games at the Hoover Met to kind of get themselves familiar with the ballpark. This year, it's not going to do them a whole lot of good. So this weekend against Alabama is, in fact, the last few games, Thursday, Friday, Saturday for Auburn baseball. And you could throw the records out the door. Now it's just about beating Alabama and beating the team across the state.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it would be nice to go ahead and get another series win to finish off the year back-to-back on a little streak. But it is. It's the Iron Bowl of the Diamond. And, look, anytime you get together against Alabama, even if it's just for twiddly winks, you're going to play to win. And that would go a long way. I think Tiger sitting 25-25 overall. It'd be nice to go ahead and get a win against Samford, take two out of three, and at least ensure an overall, you know, winning percentage with your record this year. It's not going to do a whole lot for you conference-wise. Tigers were eliminated Friday night when Ole Miss won. Just either them or LSU had to – or either one of them wins a game, and the Tigers had to sweep Missouri and Alabama to have any shot. The likelihood of getting to Hoover was you know, less than probably 4 or 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing for pride against your in-state rival now. Let's go out with a bang. Auburn fans, get out there to Plainsman Park. Ought to be a lot of fun. I think Auburn fans will pack that out.
Yeah, I think
so,
too.
And look, let's just go out there and have a war and see who the last man standing in this state is in this series.
Side note, can we talk about how chill and calm this town has become? Because you had all the students here, then you had graduation, you had home baseball series, home softball series, and then all last week you had the SEC softball tournament, which that was just crazy in itself. And now,
hey, they got the bridge fixed too over on Rexville Road.
Yeah, good. So job, add that guys to the town. Yeah, they finally got that knocked out. So, man, I drove across town in like less than 10 minutes earlier. Like, yeah, you can drive and almost catch the green lights. It's wild, man. So just a shout out to the city of Auburn, now being Auburn and Opelika, I guess, now just chilled out a little bit. And speaking of softball, while they did not make a deep, deep run in the SEC tournament, they do get a chance to make a run in the NCAA tournament, as they saw their name drawn, and heard their name, I should say, in the NCAA regionals. And shocker, they're going to Tallahassee again. They're going to play a really good Florida State team who has one of the best offenses in the country in terms of college softball. And it's so funny because you look across the state in Alabama, who went, what was, I can't remember their record off the top of my head. They lost like 9 out of the last 12. They're like 10-13 or something like that. Lost 9 out of their last 12 games in the SEC, but yet they're still hosting a regional. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I digress. Auburn going to Tallahassee, taking on the likes of UCF to start, and then more than likely Florida State in game number two. So,
yep, it's going to be Auburn as the number two seed there. Of course, host Florida State number one, UCF three, and the University of Chattanooga will be seeded fourth and have to take on the Noles. Yeah, not only do you get one Florida team in Florida State, but you get the gals out of Orlando coming up. So they'll probably have a pretty raucous crowd down there for that first game.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Auburn people will travel. I have really enjoyed watching fast pitch softball this season. I didn't start watching it until a little bit later. Just there's so much other sports on that takes up my time. But, you know, this time of year, as things wind down and they crank it up into postseason, it's an intense battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the players are out there grinding hard, and trying to watch that with my youngest son, who watches any sport, and explain to him what a slapper is, and how a pitcher can leave and come back in, and all these different things. It's a fun sport to watch. So I can't wait to watch the regional postseason softball in college. And college is fantastic must-watch television.
Well, it's here's what
all those games seem to go down to the end.
Exactly.
I mean, they were playing like 13, 14 inning games over there.
Yeah, the SEC tournament was ridiculous.
It was crazy.
Yeah, and the same day you had two games go 14 innings, which that's double the amount of time. A regular game, 7 innings, and Auburn was included in that, and they let Georgia walk them off. But look, I've said this for a long time. College, and not even college, but softball players have more fun than just about anybody. Like, on the field, they are always excited, having fun, yelling, screaming, getting into it. And softball is different than baseball because just about every ball is put into play. Like, there's not a whole lot of striking out or deep pop flies and infield pop flies and all that type of stuff where it's like, and the first out is recorded on a fly out to right. No, it's hard hit ball back to the wall. Okay, right. She makes the grab. Or it's a screamer up the middle, or there's something on the infield where they're trying to turn to. Like, there's always something happening in softball, which makes it a little bit more exciting a lot of times to watch and to call for me as a broadcaster. podcaster. I've been a part of that a few times too. So yeah, looking forward to that Auburn down in Tallahassee. They'll be taking on UCF in game one. They'll have a decision to make if they want to throw pitchers by committee and try to get to game two and throw Matty Pinta against Florida State, or guarantee yourself the first win and throw Matty Pinta. We'll see what that becomes, because if you go 2-0, you're at a good spot. But if you go 1-1, then you got to really battle back through the loser's bracket. So, a couple of updates there. Auburn baseball wrapping up.
13, Jacob. 13.
Yes.
The number of SEC teams that play women's softball. Vanderbilt does not.
Correct.
All 13 make the postseason.
Yep.
And then you might as well say it's 15 out of 15, because Oklahoma and Texas did also. You talk about competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I mean, we always talk about how baseball is dominant in the SEC. Sure. Softball is every bit of it, if not more.
No question, if not more.
Because every team made it. Yeah, Vanderbilt, you said it. They don't play softball. And then you have Texas, Oklahoma, two of the best teams in the country. Yeah, they'll be wearing the SEC logo a year from now. So that's competitive, man. It's awesome. Spring sports getting into the thick of it. Softball postseason play. Auburn baseball wrapping up the regular season. Samford tomorrow. And then you can listen to Alabama this weekend over on Wings 94.3. Thursday, Friday, Saturday series for Auburn baseball over at Plainsman Park. We'll take our first break here in hour number one. Phone lines are open. 334-321-1390. Best and worst from the weekend when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7 on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. He's Uncle Tebow, and I'm Jacob Goins. We do it every Monday at this time. Best and worst from the weekend. We'd love to hear from you as well. What's the best thing you saw in sports this weekend, or what's the worst thing that you saw in sports this weekend? 334-321-1390. Uncle T-Bone, I know you got a couple of things in terms of best of worst things you saw, so you can start wherever you'd like, sir. Best and worst things you saw this weekend in sports.
Not only is it the same sport, it's the same tournament. It was over at Quail Hollow for the Wells Fargo on the PGA over in Charlotte, North Carolina this past weekend. I watched a good bit of that. Was doing a lot of chores around the house. Had the TV on out on the deck. And take a break and watch some golf for a little bit, then get back after it. Xander Schauffele is 11 under going into Saturday and up, I believe, by 5 strokes over Roy McIlroy. Kind of gotten hot on Friday. And heck, by the end of Saturday, Roy McIlroy had taken the lead and then ended up just closing him out, shooting 17 under for the tournament. Xander Schauffele, who was 11 under heading into Saturday, finishes at 12 under for the tournament. In the same amount of time, the best of Roy McIlroy shooting 11 under over the weekend, and Xander Schauffele shoots 1 under.
Yeah.
I mean, what a choke job that was. That was definitely the worst I saw the weekend.
I mean,
he's got to get it together. That kid's got too much talent.
He's so good.
There's some type of mental disconnect. I don't know. I know that there's his father was very influential in his junior golf experience growing up, and was one of these guys that was, I don't want to call him a helicopter mom or dad, but was pretty tough on him about golf. And he's just got way too much talent. First of all, not to have already won a major.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly,
and he's been in them. He's been all in them in majors.
And secondly, for something like this to happen, he is one of the top professionals in the PGA. And he took gas, Jacob, not just on Sunday, okay, in the final round. It started early on Saturday.
Hmm.
And that's just unexplainable to me. But Rory McIlroy, the best of it. That's some of the best golf I've seen him play in a long time.
He needed it.
And I'm going to tell you what, man. I don't care what anybody says. When Rory gets rolling and flexes, you better watch out.
Well, I mean, he's one of the greatest golfers in the game if
you
he's playing at his peak.
And he's out there hitting mega bombs off the tee box, leading the PGA in driving. And as long as his iron play is what it was over the weekend over at Quail Hollow, the demons that get in his head around the green aren't going to matter, and he will be a factor with that flex heading into the PGA Championship this weekend in Lexington at Valhalla.
Yeah, Valhalla there. And, you know, for Xander, I mean, he's a fan favorite because everybody knows how good he is and how good he can be if he were to just get over that hump, right? I mean, he's got to get over it. And once he does, he's going to start winning lots of golf tournaments. And also, let me side note on this. We know, if you're a golf fan, you know all the things that have happened with the PGA and the LIV and everything like that, and how the PGA has had to massively increase their purse number because they had to stay competitive with LIV. I saw something. Rory won over $3 million this weekend in that tournament for winning it. Like 3.5, 3.4, 3.6, somewhere in there. Over $3 million for winning the Wells Fargo. Not a major. Not the FedEx, not a major, nothing. He won just a random tournament on a Sunday afternoon. It's a well-known tournament, sure, but it's not a big, big, big one. And to win over $3 million for it is insane to me, given what total purses used to be. It's triple what the winners used to get in a tournament like that.
Total purse now for that tournament this weekend. You want to take a guess at it?
Total purse? I mean, yeah. You're looking at 40 or 50 mil, probably.
Nah, it's not that high, but it was 20 million for the total purse.
Oh, okay. Wow.
You know, and I'm with you. It's a well-known tournament. That's a great golf course, Quail Hollow.
Yeah.
The Green Mile right there at the end. I mean, it's like you're never going to finish. I mean, that course would kill me trying to finish it.
Oh, it would be brutal.
It's and you know, these guys are just so at some ridiculous gear that we'll never see in golf, a game that we love to play. But
a game I got to play this weekend.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I need to get out there here pretty soon myself. Don't like it when it's cold and rainy.
Oh,
though.
Saturday was beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, we teed off at 9:30 out there at the new Pines Crossing.
It's a nice Saturday. It was a little bit cooler, a little bit nice little breeze. So, and that's a great place, and I highly recommend you get out there and see the new golf course. As an Indian Pines lifer, I totally think you got to get out there and play it. So, but back to the tournament itself. I mean, it's a well-known tournament. It's not even a mid-major, but you know, it's not the Mexican Open either, right? I mean, it's you know, a couple steps below a major. So McIlroy loves this. Rory loves this. It's the fourth time he's won it.
Yeah.
I mean, he tears that place up. So, and he keeps going back for more. Schauffele at 30 years old, though, has won seven tournaments. That's strong. Okay, that's seven more than I'm ever going to sniff, that's for sure. His best finish, he's had a couple of second-place finishes, both in 18 at the Open and 19, the Masters. I'm not saying the clock is ticking on his major winning capabilities because the guy is that good. But, you know, with all these younger golfers coming up and more opportunity on the PGA Tour with a lot of people over at the LIV Tour that made the jump over there, I mean, you're looking at a situation maybe where he's your next Ricky Fowler, still a fan favorite, can play and can ball and gets real close in some of these majors but just can't get over the hump.
Best thing I saw in sports this weekend was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when the one and only Paul Skeens made his MLB debut. And this guy is good. And we don't have to tell you how good he is because we saw him play at LSU. He started at Air Force. People forget about that. The California kid started at the Air Force Academy and eventually went to play at LSU and is just absolutely ridiculous. Hit 17 different times. He hit 100 miles an hour. He has a slider. Here's the quote from ESPN, right? A fastball that reached at least 100 miles an hour 17 times. A slider that left major leaguers shaking their heads. An invention called a splinker that is a hybrid of a splitter and a sinker. And it dips and dives unlike any pitch anywhere in baseball. They're saying he's top five already, Uncle Tebow. Top five pitcher in the game as of right now, and he's played one time.
Y'all get out there and go start buying his baseball cards, folks.
Yeah.
Put them away for about 25 years from now because unless there's some type of tragic injury or ending to his career, this guy has got Hall of Famer written all over
him. He's got it all about it.
He is a baller.
Yes, he is. So that was the best thing I saw this weekend. Worst thing I saw is just something that it just blows my mind in the state of college athletics. And it's the topic that we always talk about, NIL. And we'll get into some more of this as we go throughout the show today. Grado Sabor, the Utah State transfer in basketball, one of the most highly pursued transfer portal players in the class. He went to Washington. Okay, that's fine. No all problem right. there, right? All right, all right. Cool, yeah, go be a Husky. Go play. Hey, go play Big Ten basketball. That's cool. You enjoy yourself. Oh, by the way, he's got $2 million in NIL deals already set up and ready to go.
He, if...
unbelievable.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jacob. I think a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Auburn trying to fulfill two scholarships in the basketball program, this was one of the players that I threw out there that Auburn should be looking at. Did not know he was going to go for two large.
Two big ones.
So
yeah.
That's going to be a no-go over at Auburn and at most places. That's ridiculous. But the guy's a great player. But, man, I can't believe that University of Washington has $2 million to throw around in NIL for one basketball player.
Somebody does, and they're getting it to him. $2 million for basketball. Unbelievable. Hey, speaking of basketball, Auburn basketball news with the schedule when we come back.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goetz. And man, we're having a lot of fun already on a Monday afternoon. And as I told you, we were sort of teasing it a little bit, but we've made it here, and I want to talk about this. I knew it was coming today, didn't exactly know what time, but it dropped pretty much as we were going on the air today, and we do want to hear your thoughts on this as we go. 334-321-1390. We don't have the actual schedule, okay? We don't have the set schedule on days and times, but we do know who. And we do know where on who Auburn basketball will be playing this upcoming season for the 2024-2025 season. A very highly anticipated year, Uncle T-Bone, in terms of Auburn basketball with the roster, given the changes going on around the SEC with coaches and players and just how this conference continues to be one of the best conferences in all of college basketball. So here's what we're looking at. I'm going to give you the home games and the away games. Auburn will play inside of Neville Arena coming up next season inside the SEC. They'll play Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, and Georgia. They'll also play Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri, Tennessee, and the newcomer, Oklahoma. All right, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. Those are the games that Auburn will play inside of Neville Arena. Here are the games that Auburn will be outside of Neville Arena on the road in the SEC. This is brutal. Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, and the other newcomer, Texas. You're on the road at a really good Texas team. Of course, you have the home and homes with Alabama, with Ole Miss, and with Georgia. Everything else is a one-off situation. Uncle T-Bone, your initial thoughts on the home and away games for Auburn basketball for 2024 and 2025.
Well, anytime you go on the road in the SEC in any sport, it's going to be difficult. I don't think this is that terrible on the road, just at face value. I mean, of course, Alabama and Auburn are going to be the class of the league preseason. Georgia's getting better, but the Tigers have done very well over in Athens in the entire Bruce Pearl tenure at Auburn. This could be the year that Auburn kind of gets the monkey off its back at Kentucky in Rupp Arena. I mean, don't you think in Mark Pope's first year that they should be a little vulnerable? And with what Auburn's got coming back, LSU's kind of been a wild card for quite some time now. Auburn went over to Ole Miss and took care of business. South Carolina is a team that Auburn's handled very well. A&M will be a battle at home, no doubt about it. Vanderbilt's been, you know, somewhere that Auburn's played pretty well the last couple of years. And then you got Texas. Who knows what they're going to have and what that's going to be like. I mean, they've been solid, no doubt about it. So, you know, I'm going to give this a difficulty on the road of 7.5, 8 out of 10. I think it could be a lot worse.
You think so?
I mean, you catch Florida at home. I mean, that's a huge, huge get.
That
you
is
catch
awesome.
Arkansas at home with John Calipari come to town. Let's shove it down his throat.
How about that?
Right? Mississippi State at home, where Auburn lost at state this year. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go all the way up to Como in Missouri and waste, you know, 2 days traveling to get mm-hmm. up to wherever that is. Oklahoma, the newcomer, comes to town. And you catch Tennessee at home.
The home games are awesome.
So you don't have to go to Tennessee. You don't have to go to Florida. You don't have to go to Mississippi State. That's three places you lost this past season.
You don't want to go to the hump, man. The hump is...
the dump.
I was waiting on it.
I mean, I think that this is very manageable at LSU, at Ole Miss, at South Carolina, at Vanderbilt. I'm going to go ahead and say four wins. At Georgia, another win, even though they're getting better, but they're losing a lot. At Alabama will be a war. You're at Kentucky. This will be, I'm calling it now, the year that Auburn gets that losing streak stopped.
Okay.
I mean, Kentucky lost. Calipari just raided half their stuff. A lot mm-hmm. of people left anyway. I mean, I hate to say it, you know, and you can rebuild pretty quickly, but they're going to have to kind of rebuild up there with Pope.
Which I think they're doing. I mean, he's brought in some talent, but it's just talent from all over the place that he's going to throw together with you know, glue and bubble gum and hope that it works.
Right, and I think he's a good coach, and I think he could be very successful there long term. But look, man, this ain't going up to Kentucky and playing John Calipari and those five McDonald's All-Americans and him strutting around in his $50,000 suits and $25,000 Rolex and mm-hmm. Kentucky fans expecting to beat you 95-70.
I'm with you on that. And look, the home games are really, really good. As you started diving deeper into them, just looking at it up front, I was like, okay. But then, as you start looking at it, of course, you get Alabama. You get that the home and home. That's always going to be an electric atmosphere inside of Neville Arena. You get John Calipari, his first year at Arkansas, having to come on the road to Auburn.
How about a little payback from this past year?
Yeah, for sure. In a game that Auburn should have won in every single way against Kentucky, and John Calipari just couldn't get it done. Florida at home and not having to go back to Gainesville is a huge, huge win on this schedule.
We played terribly down there last year, and they embarrassed us.
Auburn always plays terrible in Gainesville. And not to mention that Todd Golden's one of the best coaches in the SEC. No secret to us on this show. If you listen, if you're one of our fans, you know we love that guy. And then, Oklahoma, a newcomer. Excited for that. We'll see. I mean, Auburn has played them in the past in the SEC Big 12 challenge.
Yeah, taking care of business.
Mm-hmm. And then Tennessee at home. Can't underestimate that either. Cannot overlook that one. Not having to go to Knoxville, and you get the Vols back inside of Neville Arena. That seems to be, as of right now, that seems to be a matchup that typically is won by the home team. I mean, it seems to be pretty heavily dominated by home teams in that one. And then, on the road, I'm with you. Vanderbilt should be a win. A&M should be a win. Ole Miss, South Carolina should both be wins. Georgia should be a win. LSU, I mean, you could make an argument, should be a win. And then you just deal with Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, and Texas. I'm excited about that Texas trip. That's going to be really, really fun for this Auburn team to make.
Yeah, that'd be a fun place to go to.
Well, that's what I'm kind of thinking selfishly here, you know, because my dad and I and our guys, we take a guys' road trip every year for Auburn basketball in the SEC. And
have to get in on that one this year. We're going to Texas.
Yeah, I mean, Texas, or because we've been to, of the ones on this schedule, we've been Alabama, Georgia, and Kentucky and Vanderbilt. So we've been to almost half of the ones on this list right now. Ole Miss maybe, but shoot, if we're going to Austin, you may have to hop in the trunk or something, Uncle T-Bone, to make a ride, because that would be a lot of fun.
Now, is it? No doubt about it. I think I could take a flight instead of getting in the trunk. Now, will every team, I mean, this is probably a very ignorant question, so forgive me, Radio Lamb. Will every team play Oklahoma and Texas in basketball this year?
They should, I would think. I would think you should play both of them. It should work out to, well, you maybe not. You may not play both. I don't fully know what that would look like in terms of how they're doing it with, because you have your set three that you play home and homes, and then everything else should kind of rotate and mix through. And so I'm curious to see what other schedules are going to look like. And again, have to state this too. This is not the schedule. We don't know how these are all going to land and how they're all going to fill out in a 3.5 month schedule. And that's what you have to look at too, right? You have to look at this
And, oh, no question.
I mean, you could say, well, yeah, you should go on the road and beat Vanderbilt and A&M and LSU and Georgia, whoever. But, yeah, if that's in the middle of a three-game road trip, then, yeah, you could trip up. You could get slipped up somewhere. I mean, that's such a big part of it, too, is how are all of these going to stack up in that schedule over the next 3 months in the winter season, right? I mean, that's a huge part of this.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You can just about guarantee, okay, so Auburn went to Alabama first this past season, then Alabama came later. You can just about guarantee that Alabama will be coming to Auburn around early February, and then around late February, Auburn will be making that return trip back to Tuscaloosa. They seem to always play Georgia early in the season, then late in the SEC schedule as well. Lately, Auburn's been playing Arkansas pretty early in the SEC schedule.
Started SEC play,
up with them. They normally play Florida a little later, which has been a problem when you're tired and you have to go on the road and you got to go down to Gainesville, and they've just whipped up on the Tigers there. So, yeah, I'm with you. You can't, you know, look, this is a very manageable schedule, at least line up on paper. But, you know, what if all of a sudden you got to go to Texas – to South Carolina, back home against Missouri, then to Texas A&M, which is going to happen at some point in the schedule. You just want it to fall, I think, earlier on a lot of that away stretch than later, because you still got more sea legs earlier. And then, you know, later in the season, look, unless you're just playing for a conference championship, as long as you're in the NCAA tournament, you're playing for seeding then, but as long as you're in, you're in.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. And it's going to be interesting to see how it stacks up, but I do like the opponents, and I like how Auburn gets them. And each SEC team will play all the other 15
teams.
That's
okay. They
will play them all. And I mean, I'm just excited about the home games, man. I mean,
I think that's a good draw for Auburn at home.
I do too.
I mean, I would much rather be playing at LSU, at Ole Miss, at South Carolina, instead of at Florida, at Mississippi State, at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it could have been worse.
No question.
Could have been a lot worse. And outside of Auburn, the one game that I know about as of right now, I'm going to start pulling up other schedules, but Arkansas and Kentucky, they play just once. All right, they play just once this year. Do the Razorbacks in the Wildcats, which has become just a top-tier rivalry because of all the storylines of John Calipari now being at Arkansas. They play that game once. Would you like to take a guess on where that game's taking place?
Well, I know the SEC has a sick sense of humor, so I'm going to say it's in Lexington.
It is in Lexington, Kentucky, inside of Rupp Arena. You better believe it. John Calipari will make his return this year inside of Rupp Arena wearing complete opposite colors that he has his entire career, pretty much. And so that's going to be so much fun. Again, don't know when that game is, sometime during SEC play, but imagine what that atmosphere is going to look like. Those two teams could be 0-17, I don't even know, in conference play, and ESPN's going to be there, College Game Day is going to be there. It is going to be the most hyped up game of the season in SEC play. Even if the teams are terrible for whatever reason, that is going to be all over TV, radio, print, websites. You better believe it. Arkansas and John Calipari will make a trip to Lexington, Kentucky this year.
Anything else jump out that you've seen so far? I'm trying to look over Alabama's schedule right now. It appears that they have at home Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt. And then we'll go on the road to play at Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Missouri, South Carolina, at Tennessee for Alabama. They do not get the home return from the Volunteers. And then they have to go to Texas and Texas A&M as well.
That's big time.
It looks like Alabama's three recurring opponents are Auburn, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. So we draw Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss. They draw us, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. That's interesting that they're going to catch Kentucky twice.
Yeah, and that's one of theirs that they'll catch twice. How about this?
I'm surprised that's not Tennessee for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of their biggest rivalries, allegedly.
Here, I was going to look at the Texas schedule because, of course, being a newcomer in the SEC, coming from I think the argument's pretty solid that they're coming from the best conference in college basketball, the Big 12 right now, growing into the SEC. I believe
that's definitely the best sport they play in that conference.
Yeah, you could say that. Here's what Texas has coming into this
year.
Well,
now at least, for sure.
No doubt about it. At home, Texas will get Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Georgia, Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. Talk about some big-time games for the Longhorns of your first year in the SEC. You get Nate Oates in the Crimson Tide. You get John Calipari in Arkansas, Bruce Pearl in Auburn, Mike White in Georgia, Mark Pope in Kentucky. You get Oklahoma. You get Rick Barnes in Tennessee.
Goodness gracious.
And you get Buzz Williams at Texas A&M.
Wow.
And Missouri, but whatever. That's in there at home for Texas this season. On the road, they go and visit John Calipari in Arkansas. And they go to Florida and see Todd Golden. LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt. Dude, Texas's road schedule is a joke compared to their home schedule. Their tough two games are Arkansas and Florida. They should wipe the floor with everybody else. LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, South Carolina, A&M, and Vanderbilt. Texas should have a field day on the road this year in the SEC, which we know it's tough to win in the SEC on the road, but man, compared to what they've got at home, Texas should be thinking they're lucky stars right now and really making an extra phone call to the SEC offices in Birmingham.
Yeah, they're going to pay for it in football, and basketball looks like a pretty good draw for them. Arkansas is one of their recurring opponents on the schedule. It looks like Oklahoma's the other one, and Texas A&M, that old rivalry, will be a home and away. And Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. So that's three. Who knows what Texas A&M's going to have this season. I mean, I think the world of Buzz Williams, but they're going to lose a ton. It's a long ways to basketball season, so I can't dare start making any predictions right now until I see how all rosters play out heading into preseason. But, you know, Texas A&M is going to lose a good bit. You know, they'll be used to playing Oklahoma. They play them every year, twice a year anyway. And then Arkansas, their old Southwestern Conference opponent. So I have to think that Arkansas will be better record-wise this year. It's hard not to be from what they did last year and all the problems that they had in Fayetteville. But I still think it's going to take a hot minute before Calipari just starts, you know, pulling that five-star talent year in, year out, like he did at Kentucky.
Speaking of Kentucky, before we get to break, some of the big home games that they'll have under Mark Pope in year one: Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee. I mean, just big-time games for Mark Pope and the Kentucky Wildcats in his first year at the helm in Lexington. None bigger for that program than John Calipari in Arkansas.
If you had to name, before we go to break, the top five teams in the SEC in basketball heading into 2024-25, who would they be?
Roster-wise? Any particular order or just top five?
Just top five, who you think's a threat to actually do some damage in the NCAA tournament, compete for the regular season championship and tournament championship.
Why don't I tell you when we come back? The hour with that. 334-321-1390. We'll talk about that as we wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line as we are talking college basketball as the SEC schedules. SEC opponents are starting to trickle out a little bit. And again, don't know the schedule yet, but we do know some opponents for a lot of the big name SEC teams. And yes, for those of you that were wondering, in terms of the basketball scheduling with Texas, Oklahoma coming in, each team has your two permanent opponents, right? So for Auburn, it's Alabama, Georgia. You'll play those two teams every year twice. You'll play them there and you'll play them here. The other one is going to be a rotating home and home every single year. So that'll be a different team. That'll rotate, and then everybody else you'll play once, however that lines up. So that's how that's going to work. And Uncle T-Bone, you were asking me top five teams going into this season for college basketball in the SEC. No particular order, all right, for me. No particular order, but Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee. I think you have to put Arkansas in there just because of John Calipari and the talent that he's bringing with him. Yes, it's going to be the Kentucky of the Midwest now because there's so many of the same players, but they're still going to be extremely talented and going to make noise. And then I'm going to pick our guy. I'm picking Florida and Todd Golden. Why? I have no idea. Just because I like him.
Oh, he's a great coach.
They got to get some serious talent down there, but if he can continue to do his thing, and I'll say this too, Florida better give him what he wants, and he better start performing. I say this in a bad way, but if they better want him to start performing and give him what he wants, because as big of a job that Florida is, there are bigger jobs out there right now in college basketball, or ones that could possibly come open that I think he would bolt for in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no question about it. He is an up-and-comer, and any program would be lucky to have them as his as their head coach. Here's my order of top five in the SEC heading in order, if Mark Sears comes back. Alabama 1, Auburn 2, Florida 3, Texas 4, and Tennessee 5.
Okay.
Now, if Mark Sears doesn't...
Oh, I forgot about Texas.
Yeah, don't forget about the Longhorns and the Sooners, because I think they're going to be one of the top 10 basketball teams in this league.
Realistically, I'll drop Florida out and put Texas in there.
So, that's how the way I see them. I do think Tennessee's going to have to, obviously reload a little bit. They're, losing Dalton Connect, but Rick Barnes has done a great job up there. They won the SEC championship regular season last year.
It's a bold statement, but I like it.
Yeah, I mean, hadn't been the greatest in postseason play in the NCAA tournament, but, they're solid. That's a solid program, and he's going to have some players. But if Mark Sears comes back, Jacob, and it's kind of weird to me that this hasn't been announced yet. I guess I've been a little bit out of the loop. Both of us have with everything that's been going on and with our work schedules. But if he comes back, not only are they the top team in the SEC, I have them preseason number one.
In the country?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Ain't no way they don't win it all if Mark Sears comes back, Jacob.
Really? Is that what they're saying?
That's the Uncle T-Bone kiss of death is what I'm saying. But no, they'll be a top five team, AP, and could very well be number one in the country.
I mean, they should be top 10 regardless, could flirt with top five preseason. And look, if all things fall in Auburn's way, they could be preseason top 10 too.
I got to see with these last couple of spots, are we ever going to fill them on the roster? Maybe we'll talk about that when we get back.
We will. Hour number one is in the books. Hour number two coming up. 334-321-1390. Come on in and be a part of it. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two of the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you here on ESPN 106.7. He's in the studio with me. It's Uncle T-Bone across from me here. If you missed any of hour number one, we had a lot of fun, and we plan on doing that here again. In hour number two, we talked a little Auburn baseball, Auburn softball. Back in hour number one, has got some updates on both teams. Softball in the regionals now. They're going into the NCAA tournament, and baseball is getting ready for their final week of the year. So talked a little bit about that. Also had best and worst from over the weekend. Talked about that in sports. And then, coming on the air today, Auburn basketball's SEC opponents were released, along with other SEC schools as well. And so that's been a big part of the conversation here today, and we have some more things to talk about that when we get into this hour. We're also going to have Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network will join us. We'll talk about baseball and softball. Of course, golf is happening right now, too. All sorts of updates around Auburn athletics, and we'll get his thoughts on the SEC opponents as well. So up until then, that'll be at 3:30. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Whatever's on your mind, we want to hear from you. And that's what we're doing to start hour number two. John in Auburn, you're on the line, man. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jacob. How are you, Uncle T?
Doing good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, I was going to share. I don't know if either of y'all were aware of this. It wasn't really promoted that much. But I saw an interesting thing Saturday, was in attendance. I don't know if y'all were aware of this, but Coach Pearl spoke in front of at a church meeting in Opelika, a packed house, just giving. I've never seen him as laid back as he was Saturday, just speaking on Israel and his background and growing up in Boston in a Jewish community. Probably spoke without notes for 45 minutes. It was a fascinating conversation.
I will be honest, I did not know that that was happening, but I have heard Bruce Pearl speak a couple of times at different events, and he's a very good speaker, a well-spoken person. I mean, he can, like you said, he can kind of get up there, and he's got the charisma and the personality to just go and tell you what he's saying and really tell you what he's thinking and really has a way with words at times. But no, I honestly didn't know that that was happening this weekend.
And the best line he had, in my opinion, he said, look, he's speaking to a large church group, about 500, 600 people. He said, look, a lot of y'all believe that Moses led the Jews on the Exodus, but y'all didn't believe I could turn around this basketball program. So I thought that was a really good line.
It felt like, as a longtime Auburn basketball fan and fan itself of the university, that we'd been in the desert for 40 years at least waiting on somebody to lead us out into the promised land. So I appreciate his efforts here as the head coach at Auburn. He's been nothing but a fantastic representative of Auburn basketball and the university itself. I say this to a lot of people, and I believe it. I think he might be one of the greatest assets that Auburn's had as an entire university in its existence, at least in my lifetime. And I do respect his opinions and had heard about the discussion he was hosting at the local church about what's happening in Israel. I understand that there's a group of pro-Israel people here in Lee County that helped put that together. And and with his Jewish background, and I mean anybody's background, the events that happened in last October were horrific, and they were just I can't even describe it, so I can't imagine how he feels about it other than the fact that I've seen several of his posts on Twitter and several of his appearances on news broadcast around the country, including Fox News, and it makes me very proud that he's our head coach because I believe in what he's saying.
Indeed, indeed. Hey, if I may switch it a little more to sports, had something I thought about last week, wanted y'all's take on it.
Okay.
So if you think about the NFL draft for a second, you look at the draft, there are positions of need kind of universally in the NFL. Quarterback, defensive end, a lot of times now wide receiver position. You don't see a lot of teams using a first-round pick on a center or a guard that you're not going to move the tackle or a strong safety. What I was thinking about is I was thinking about how these college recruiting rankings are going. And it's interesting with Auburn, especially this past year, having a great quarterback recruit and some of the top high school wide receivers coming to Auburn. Yet a five-star wide receiver is listed positionally in these ranking systems the same way a center would be listed or a strong safety, which I don't think is of as much positional worth.
Okay, so
I don't know if the system could be fixed, but it's just an interesting take on it. I thought that Auburn could actually have a better recruiting class than you think because the positions Auburn got elite players in are more coveted than other position groups.
So basically it would be certain positions would almost be weighted because of the impact that they have?
Sure.
I guess so. Yeah. And you'd really start getting into some serious detail if it were either position oriented or, John, I'll take it a step further, if it were position oriented based off of the team's needs, kind of like you're talking about. Now that would be a lot. You're really starting to get into opinion-based rather than trying to stick to the numbers, which is what the rankings do most of the time, not all the time, which is why I'm not the biggest fan of them. But Yeah, you're really starting to get a
five-star versus four-star is so factually based to begin with.
Exactly. You're exactly right about that. I mean, the difference in a high four-star and a low five-star is very, very minimal. But you're really getting into, judgment on what you think, John, versus what I think. But that's what makes what we do so much fun. But that is interesting because, because Auburn taking a wide receiver right now means more than – I don't know, Boise State taking a receiver or UConn Utah or whoever the heck it is, right? It means more to certain programs to take a certain player than it would other programs. I get what you're saying.
Right, and I think there's more value added in having a five-star edge than, say, a five-star center or a five-star tight end.
Yeah, this is an
interesting way to think about recruiting.
Yeah, this is a more intelligent way of looking at it other than just, trusting the local sites, whichever one you go to, and their national recruiting people putting some type of arbitrary number on such and such player. And if you got the most numbers and the highest average stars, then you're the best recruiting class. I mean, it was very clear what you're saying, that Auburn fulfilled a desperate need on their roster with the wide receivers that they recruited this last year, which could make, if you take a deeper dive into what they're doing recruiting, and I think you see a lot of that in what you're talking about in portal guys, where it's like, look, we need a safety. Did we get the safety that we wanted? Or in basketball, we need a four. Did we get the four we needed? But Auburn clearly, fulfilled its greatest need, in my opinion, last year in recruiting, and that's playmakers on the outside, which we have been devoid of for years.
And I'll end with this. I'm waiting for this fall because I'm waiting to see who puts a linebacker trying to just cover Fairweather with a linebacker. It's not just the receivers out wide that are going to get their fill. Fairweather could have a huge season.
Well, that's why you see a lot of these positions when teams release rosters or like projected starters, where it's not like it used to be, John, where it was a 3-4 and four of the guys were linebackers, or a 4-3 and three of the guys were linebackers. You got all these different positions like buck and star and whatever. Teams aren't rolling out 6'3", 235 pound outside linebacker anymore to guard tight ends. They're getting a strong safety or hybrid cornerback nickel.
Yeah, and rolling them down or something. But it's more weapons the better. And enjoy the show and appreciate the time. And y'all enjoy the week.
Yep, appreciate the call, John. Always great to hear from you, my man. Always bringing different perspectives to the show, and I love it, man. 334-321-1390. I want to go back to the recruiting ranking thing for a second because, it's no secret that I like the rankings, sure, and I look at the rankings, of course, but it's not make or break. It's not do or die, and I know that's some people's profession, and I know that some people's just what you would call bread and butter, Uncle T-Bone, where they just live in the recruiting rankings, and all this team has so many 5-stars, and we've got so many 4-stars, and he's ranked 0.002 points better than this guy, so we got to go after him instead. No, I don't buy into that crap. I think you go after players that fit your system, your roster, your culture, and guys that you just genuinely like if you're a coaching staff, rather than doing what the rankings tell you to do. And I think John brings up a good point, and I'll say this too. I know it doesn't make sense looking towards the future and the potential of a recruiting class, but that's why I like to go and say, like right now, as we're approaching the 2024, as the 2024 class has been concluded and we're looking to 2025, go look back at the 2021 class, 2020 class, and go back and see, not just for Auburn, I'm saying for every program, you look back 2 or 3 years, and you look at it and say, okay, how did that pan out? Because that's what, to me, that's what tells what a good recruiting class was, is, okay, did they go after guys that panned out, that were active members of the team that made that team better and then went on to do something else, rather than, well, this guy's a 5-star and in today's world, you paid him the most money. Congratulations, you're the best recruiting team in the country. That doesn't mean anything to me. What means something to me is You recruited that kid. You brought him in. He was your leading receiver, and you developed him, and after 2 years, he just got drafted in the first round. That's what recruiting means to me, rather than you paid him the most money and you convinced him to come to your school. Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's about making them better and making your team better. That's what recruiting is.
That's the perfect way it used to be to look at it. But NIL and transfer portal have changed all that. I mean, you can't say that Alabama did not have just an outstanding recruiting class that had Caleb Downs in it, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He was there 1 year. He's at Ohio State now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to – it used to be you could take the recruiting services with a grain of salt, although the teams that historically year in, year out are in the top 10 are normally the teams historically in the top 10 of all the rankings at the end of the season.
Sure.
Okay, so they do get – the talent numbers right. I think there is, like John said, a need to address teams a little bit more analytically on, hey, not only did Auburn get, you know, a couple 5-star receivers and 2 4-stars, they had to have those.
Yeah.
Right? So they get a little bump for that. But, you know, in the NFL, you got people who are professionals like that, and there's only so many draft picks in the NFL, it's easier to break it down. There's literally thousands of kids going into college to play football every year. That being said, I think the recruiting services do a pretty good job, but you can't look back anymore because of the portal. I mean, if you look back at in the olden days.
I see what you're saying.
If you look back at Auburn's last, before Hugh Freeze got here, 2 or 3 recruiting classes, you'd think that we didn't even recruit.
Yeah, they're gone.
None of those players are here.
Yeah.
And at the time, on paper, a lot of those players were highly recruited. Here's the way I look at recruiting. Are the top teams in the country after these players or not? If they are, you need to be after these players. When we're in the South and we're recruiting over at Phoenix City, am I recruiting the kid that, no offense to him, that McNeese State is recruiting? Or am I recruiting the kid that Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia are recruiting?
Mm-hmm.
How many of those battles can you win against teams like that who over the last 10 to 15 years have dominated college football? Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma. How many of those head-to-head battles can you win? But because for a long time, no matter what our recruiting looked like on paper, and it was always decent, Auburn was like 2 of 25 against Alabama in head-to-head battles. But Hugh Freeze
and those recruiting battles, yeah.
And that's why there's and it seemed like 0-60 against Georgia, and that's why they've been kicking our butts.
Mm-hmm.
They've been beating us on the recruiting trail, and then therefore they're going to beat us the majority of time on the field. So you got to go head up against whoever else these other people are recruiting to, and win some of those battles, or you're never going to have any success on the field.
Right. I mean, you can't go after the 2 and 3 stars and expect to beat the 4 and 5 stars. And that's a fact, right?
I think a team like Auburn can supplement occasionally with the 3-star, right? Maybe the 2-star that they see something, the diamond in the rough, the Chris Davis, for example.
Yeah, the ones here and there.
But they're like the transfer portal. Over time, they have to supplement your roster.
Correct.
You cannot build a top 25 program recruiting 2 and 3 stars.
You can't have a whole team of them. And there are
absolutely
coaches.
Absolutely not.
There are coaches that believe they can do that, and that's not the way of the world
anymore.
Well,
one of them just got run out of Auburn a couple years ago.
Yeah, you better believe
because
it.
Because he thought a lunch pail and a hard hat was going to get it done because he was from Boise, Idaho, and he's done now. He's Toaster Strudel.
Toaster Strudel, yep. And it's just what you were saying, too, about, yeah, you can think about it right now. You hope this isn't the case, but think about Auburn's 2024 recruiting class right now. In 3 years, when we look back, how many of those players would have completed more than one season here?
10.
10 total?
I'm going to say 50%, so I'm going to say 12 and a half out of would be the over-under out of 25.
Which I don't think is a hateful number.
And it's not because they're terrible.
No, it's just because.
Or they didn't pan out, or they were overrated by the recruiting services, or we just missed. It's because they got other opportunity.
Yeah, which is, again, it's so much harder to look back now. You're exactly right. Because that's how I look at it, and that's what I would want to do. I wrote it down. I said, I want to look back at recruiting rankings because that is what tells me whether it was successful or not. But, man, you can't do that anymore.
You can't, man.
You could do it in 2008.
No question.
When Lindy's came out in the magazine, you could go look at it and be, oh, yeah, I remember that, right? You could go and look back at recruits and be like, man, that guy was a really good player. Man, he just didn't work out. But now if it doesn't work out, you just go play for Colorado and everything will be okay.
Nick Saban's first full recruiting class at Alabama was in 2008. And I think out of the top, like, 20 players in the state of Alabama, they got 18 of them. One of them was a running back out of Daphne who committed to Auburn, and he never even made it to campus. And the other one was a guy named William Green who went to Florida, a defensive end. Everybody else was Alabama, and almost every single one of those players played for 3 years.
That's a successful recruiting class.
And that's how they got back on top.
Yeah.
And that could not missing on players and keeping them in your program and developing them over time does not – if they did the same thing now, only 9 of those players might have played all 3 years.
Crazy.
Maybe.
I'm with you. It's crazy. It's all changed. It is completely changed. John, we appreciate the call. Sparked a great conversation here. 334-321-1390. We'll talk a little bit more basketball when we come back. And then at the bottom of the hour at 3:30, Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network will join us. So stay tuned. More of the Monday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Couple of more minutes before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour at 3:30. But phone lines are still open. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And we've talked a lot of basketball today, but something that you and I have not been able to talk about together, Uncle T-Bone, and I mentioned this a little bit late last week, as Auburn basketball in the portal continuing to swing and miss. They continue to go after some big names and unable to get them home. They've gone to other big time programs like, I guess you could say big time, Power 6 programs. How about that? Oklahoma, UCF, and other places. And the latest one
Georgia.
Beating... Yeah, Georgia. Yep, there you go. The latest being Jordan Ivy Curry, the point guard who went to Central Florida because that's where all big-name basketball players want to play. And Auburn loses him, but they've got another one on the radar as of right now, Uncle T-Bone, by the name of Dior Johnson, who has a troubled past, I think is the best way to put it. And I read a little bit of an article the other day on the show about some of his past things. And if you want to go find that, you can just Google it and look at it. We won't bring up those things on the air. But Auburn...
We won't.
I mean, we can.
I mean, I think it needs to be discussed.
It's not good. Everybody
right,
else...
Just put it like this. Dior Johnson was one of the top point guards in the country back in 2021-2022, a five-star in high school by all the recruiting services that we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes. He's from Kingston, New York, and signed with the University of Pittsburgh to play for Coach Capel there. And this is – I'm just going to bring it up. October 7th, 2022, article CBSNews.com up in Pittsburgh. Pitt basketball player Dior Johnson charged with aggravated assault and strangulation.
Hmm.
I mean, they hit him with multiple charges. Apparently, he had gotten into it with some type of date or girlfriend. She had thrown his phone around, and he lost his temper, apparently, got violent, and repeatedly punched the victim in her arm, stomach, and head multiple times. The article goes on to say that there was a criminal complaint. The woman called 911 in fear of her life. Johnson ran after her with scissors, took the phone, hung it up, and threw it, and then cut himself up with the scissors to make it look like that the person that he was assaulting allegedly had cut him up. Needless to say, he was not with the University of Pittsburgh much longer than that. Went into the transfer portal, tried to get on with Syracuse, then ended up at a junior college where he's been trying to get his life together. So that is apparently a very, very, very talented young basketball player who got in a lot of trouble at Pittsburgh, and it seems like deservingly so. And Auburn is considering giving this guy a second shot after going to JUCO and trying to get his life together. I mean, they had apparently had a Zoom meeting with him a few days ago. It seems like that Coach Pearl and his staff, the athletic director, and the entire university are trying to do their due diligence to see if this guy has, not moved on from these charges, but transformed his life from these charges.
Yeah.
I mean, what has he done to rectify that mistake? What has he done to change his life? Look, I'm all for giving somebody second, even third chances, right? I mean, could you believe that Cam Newton got in a lot of trouble down at Florida, and had he not come to Auburn and no one ever given him another shot, would he have been what would have happened at Auburn, then the number one pick in the NFL, and moved on with his life and become pretty much an all-around good dude from all his mistakes as a youngster? But this one feels a little different to me, Jacob, and I've given several other teams a lot of Hades over the years for players like Jermaine Burton punching a player for the wide receiver University of Alabama, punching a young woman who was running onto the field after a loss at Tennessee, and I can't just sit here and say, this is different. I can't do it. Now, look, would I do this? I'm just going to put it to you like this. Would I sign him? No. Sorry, not going to do it. And you know I want to win as bad as anybody. But that being said, I'm not in charge over there. I don't agree with every decision by every coach over there or the athletic department, and certainly not the university. It's their ass. If this goes bad, Bruce Pearl's earned the right to make any choices he wants to make with his program. Did I agree with him just, not even the same consideration, but did I agree with him when he was playing Leor Berman guarding Mark Sears at the University of Alabama this past February when we got beat? No. And I called it out. And then I ate crow a couple of weeks later when Leor Berman went off playing against Alan Flanagan against Ole Miss, right? So he's the coach. They're in charge. All I can tell you is I wouldn't do it. But I'm not going to sit here and say, if y'all do something like that, I'm never going to support you again. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. My take on it was, Auburn has lost three of their transfer portal targets to other programs because Auburn could not offer them the two things that everybody demands nowadays, right? The term that I have coined, how much are you going to play me and how much are you going to pay me? And Auburn has been asked those two questions by three different players and they have not been able to give the answer they wanted, so they went to play somewhere else. In the terms of a player like Dior Johnson, you do not have the luxury of asking those two questions. Given your past,
no.
You have no flexibility, no room. You have nothing to bring to the table except your skill as a basketball player and the asking for one more shot. And so, that's why Auburn could take a chance on him. And it could work for Dior Johnson at Auburn or wherever else he could end up. Because a guy like that, you just don't have a lot of bargaining room given the things that are on your record right now.
This kid, 6'3 guard, led JUCO in scoring this season, 29.7 points per game, 5.9 assists, and 5.4 rebounds. He's a 6'3 point guard, was the number one point guard in the country in 2022 coming out of high school, a five-star recruit. He's a baller. He's a baller. So do you give the kid a shot? If you do, he comes in, he owns up what he does, and he tells everybody where he's going and where he's not going back to. That's the only way. And let me tell you what, if they do it, I know we're at a quick break, Auburn University has to stand behind him totally 100%.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network coming up after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. And as we're always joined on Mondays at 3:30, it's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network with us on the phone lines. Hillman, great to hear from you once again, brother. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you, too, as well. Glad to see the rain has stopped for now here on the loveliest village on the plain.
Yeah, for now. We'll see. I don't know if it's supposed to rain anymore this week or not. I know it was a beautiful weekend, and then, last night and today has been pretty ugly. So, luckily, though, it was a pretty nice kind of week, and the back part of it last week for the SEC softball tournament, beginning of it was just all over the place with late-night games and then rain the next day. It was all sorts of craziness, but we'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. We're going to talk all things Auburn athletics with Jacob Hillman. And let's start with Auburn baseball because last week we talked about a win over the weekend, but now we get to talk about a series win as the Tigers go to Como and get their first SEC series win of the season. It took them a while to get there, Hillman, but they finally got it done.
Yeah, look, and it's one of those things, and obviously Auburn won't be making the postseason this year, but it's still very important for this team just to kind of end this year on a good note and a high note. And Auburn's trying to do that this past weekend, going 3-1, like you mentioned, the series win in Columbia, plus the midweek win at Georgia Tech. That was a very notable win as well, 7-2 over the Yellow Jackets to sweep the season series. I was really pleased with what I saw from this team this weekend. It seemed like it all came together, the pitching and the hitting after Friday night. And that was very important. Obviously, Sunday got a little frisky, but being able to hold off that comeback attempt by Missouri was something that I don't know if Auburn could have done in previous weekends. So I thought that they really stepped up and kept fighting, even when you know that that there's obviously no postseason to look forward to. But you know that this upcoming weekend you've got your rival in Alabama coming to town, and you want to be playing your best ball when they do. And obviously, a series win or series sweep over them it changes the perspective a little bit of this season, where you can kind of ruin any chances they have of hosting and potentially knocking down a seat. So that's something that you can look forward to this weekend.
Yeah, and my opinion is Auburn's got to, and I know we're coming up, of course, on the final week of the season, but, man, they got to cut out all these late-game blunders and dramatics and go out and just get a couple of wins where you don't have to sit and stress as a fan, as a media member, or as a player and a coach where, man, you're stressing for 9 innings just waiting on it to blow up and kind of go the wrong way. And that happened again yesterday, but they held on, of course. But got to cut those out at the end of this year and really moving into next year.
Yeah, and I think it really comes down, again, to the pitching. We've talked about it all year. Obviously, the offense has had its struggles as well. But overall, if you look at it as a whole, the offense has done its job this year and gave this team a chance to win. But at times, the pitching, whenever you put up a 3-run inning, then the pitching needs to come back and put up a 0 on the board. And most of the time, that wasn't the case this season in some of these losses where, like you said, it doesn't make any sense. Late game, you look and how did Auburn lose this game when you have 3 guys that have multi-hit games or something like that? And it's just because of the response by the opposing team, and it's just unable to shut down them. So I do think that this weekend is kind of a big one, obviously, just because it is Alabama. But also, whenever you go into the off season, and obviously in today's day and age, we'll see what kind of roster turnover there is. But you want to have some kind of confidence, want some kind of positivity going into the summer.
What are you expecting from kind of what you're hearing and seeing around town? I know the week is just getting started, but it is going to be a big weekend on the Plains when Alabama comes to town. There's not anything on the line for Auburn in terms of postseason play, but it is the Crimson Tide coming to town and the final time that Auburn fans can see this baseball team since, they're not going to be in postseason play. I expect a pretty good crowd this weekend at Plainsman Park, don't you?
Yeah, and I think it'll be I think it'll be a good mixture of away and home crowd. I don't think it's going to be some Alabama takeover, but they're obviously going to travel. This is probably one of the better Alabama teams that they've had in recent years. Obviously, the turmoil that they've had last year with the whole scandal of the sports betting last year and first year head coach Rob Vaughn, and credit to them, he's done a great job. They're ranked in the top 25, so I just really do expect this to be a good old-fashioned Alabama-Auburn matchup this weekend at Plainsman Park. It's obviously going to be the last game at Plainsman Park before most of these renovations are done, so it's going to look a whole lot different in February of 2025 when the Tigers return to Plainsman Park, and we're excited for that. So, yeah, one last weekend to do it in front of the Auburn family, and that's very important for Coach Thompson and this staff and these players.
Auburn baseball on the road tomorrow up in Birmingham at the Hoover Met, taking on Samford as of right now. If you look at the weather, Hillman, it doesn't look great, and so I don't know if that game is going to happen. We'll keep you updated as we go.
We'll see. I hope it does. Last year, that game got canceled. It was such an odd one because it rained pretty much only at the Hoover Met for that game last year.
Which is how it always goes at the Hoover Met.
Yeah, you're kind of right about that.
I mean, it always rains. If there's a baseball game happening in Hoover, Alabama, it is going to rain at some point during the day, which is why so many people want that thing to be covered for the SEC tournament, or just move it. Put it somewhere that there is a covered one.
Bad take.
Bad take? Wow. Okay.
Bad take.
Okay. That's all right.
Keep it in Hoover. Keep it in Hoover.
Okay. Well, then put a cover on it because it gets rained. The SEC tournament gets rained out every year.
Has an SEC championship ever been missed because of it?
Jacob, the further you can get SEC championships away from Bamberham, the better for me.
Okay. You know what? Valid. But I like being close to it for here in Auburn. So.
That's fair.
What about at Biscuit Stadium then?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a major league stadium. No big deal. Or minor league stadium.
Yeah.
You know, oh, goodness.
There's not the functionality of the Hoover Met. You got the Finley Center, you got the RV park, and we're going down a rabbit hole. That's besides the point.
Yeah, that is. Well, Auburn, supposed to play there tomorrow. We'll see, but they will not be playing there for the SEC tournament. On the flip side of things for Auburn softball, as we talk with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, busy week here in Auburn last week with the SEC softball tournament, which was just really well ran. The production was really good. Everything, as far as I know, other than the rain, went really, really well for the SEC softball tournament. And now Auburn is in the NCAA tournament, and by no surprise, they are heading down back to Tallahassee to hopefully have a date with the Seminoles.
Yeah. First of all, shout out to the entire Auburn athletic staff that had a hand in putting on the SEC tournament at J&B Moore Field. It was a really successful event, even with a lot of the adversity that they faced. 42 innings on Wednesday, and then obviously the rain on Thursday. So just hats off to them, and I'm sure the SEC was very pleased with their stay here over the weekend. But Auburn obviously going to Tallahassee, as you said, and it's going to be an interesting one. This is the 19th time in program history, so this is a mainstay for Auburn. Auburn's been to a regional every year for under Coach Mickey Dean, and obviously Coach Dean, he'll be retiring after this year, as we've discussed already, but. I just think that this year you're facing a UCF team first on Friday at 1 o'clock Central in Tallahassee. That's coming off its first season in Big 12 play, and 12-15 in the Big 12 in softball. That's pretty solid, especially in your first year there. So I expect to see a tough game for Auburn on Friday, and I'll be interested to see who Coach Dean goes to with as far as it goes pitching. I haven't really studied UCF yet, but with the way Shelby Lowe is pitched against lefties, I don't know if there's a lefty-heavy lineup in this regional, but I think you've got to save Shelby for that if you do have that. And obviously, Maddie Penta is your workhorse, and she's been so dominant that you want her against the best opponent. So in the regional, that would obviously be Florida State. So it'll be really interesting to see what goes down in Tallahassee this week, and Britt Bowen and J.J. Jackson will be headed down there for the action this weekend.
Jacob Hillman with the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob, I know you are very busy. Have you had a chance to look over the basketball opponents for the SEC drop today for Auburn in 2024 and 2025? Give us your thoughts. It looks like the three mainstays, home and aways, will be, of course, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss. We both believe here at On the Line that Auburn got a fantastic home draw and a very manageable away draw.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you because not having to go to Florida, not having to go to Arkansas or Tennessee, that's a big deal. I think your toughest away draw is – and obviously this – some might disagree with this. Alabama and Kentucky are very difficult road games to play. Obviously, Auburn hasn't won in Rupp Arena since – Sonny Smith was the head coach, but I think Texas is going to be a tough one this year, and I think that they're going to be a very, very good team. Kentucky might be in kind of a rebuild mode, and that might make that game a little bit easier. I think this would be a great chance for Auburn to snap that losing losing streak, and we know what it's like whenever the Iron Bowl is being played. So that's obviously a tough one. But, I mean, I think those three games are really your toughest ones. And, you know, if you had to go on the road to Arkansas, Florida, or Tennessee, or even in Oklahoma, that would make it a tougher road stretch. So, yeah, I'm very pleased with it. I think that's a very exciting home stretch for the Auburn family, and they're going to be able to get some great games at Neville Arena. And I think the most interesting thing is how they're trying to the home and away opponent and how that's going to be transitioned over the next few years. Does the SEC go to 20 conference games? And if they don't, how are they going to – is it going to be three permanent home and away opponents, or is it going to be two with one rotating? I think that's very interesting to see how they've kind of adjusted some of those. Auburn's obviously didn't change, but if you look through the others, they obviously had to make something happen for Texas and Oklahoma. So teams like Arkansas, Missouri, and a few others had theirs adjusted. I think Alabama's home and away. They have Kentucky this year. So that probably won't stay permanent, but we'll see. So it'll be interesting to see going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that they didn't have Tennessee as a home and away opponent.
They haven't for several years. I think Alabama's – I forget. It was Auburn, Mississippi State, and I can't recall the other one. It might have been
LSU.
LSU, there you go, yeah. So I'm not sure the rhyme or reason, but we'll see going forward. I think next year we'll probably get a more firm answer.
Well, and just think about it this way, too. If and when, and a big emphasis on when, the SEC adds more teams, then you're going to have to readjust it then, too. Because, more teams are coming, whether, you know, who knows how long it's going to be, but more teams are on the way. But overall, for Auburn's opponents for next season and talking Auburn basketball for 24 and 25, the big thing that I stated, Hillman, that I'm sure you agree with, is a lot of this does reflect and kind of, I guess, rely on how the games are stacked up, right, in the schedule. How many of those road games do you play back-to-back and stuff like that?
I would honestly think that I would like to play Texas later in the season than earlier. I mean, imagine if you're the first SEC home game that Texas gets to play and they're ranked in the top 10, that place will be going absolutely insane. So, yeah, I hope that game is scheduled kind of in between two home games in maybe February or something. You're exactly right. We'll see how the actual schedule shapes out in the dates of the games and whatnot, and that will tell us a little bit more. But you're right. Overall, it's a very favorable schedule.
And outside of Auburn, really quickly before we let you go, one of the biggest and already most anticipated matchups in the SEC schedule, John Calipari in Arkansas, his return to Lexington. They play once, does Arkansas and Kentucky, and of course it's inside of Rupp Arena.
Yeah, that was the interesting one. I thought 1,000% they were going to play twice. I thought Kentucky would be visiting Bud Walton, But sure enough, I do think it is tricky with only 18 games to fit all those in, because they're kind of doing the Southwest Conference thing where Texas is playing Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Oklahoma's mm-hmm. playing Missouri, Texas, and Texas A&M. So, yeah, it makes it tough for you to make those matches happen. And, again, that's why I'm very for 20 SEC SEC games, and I'm for 9 games in football as well. So hopefully those moves are made sooner rather than later, but we'll see.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us every Monday at 3:30. Before we let you go, one more thing. Plug everything else about Auburn Athletics. I know there is so much going on. Golf is going on. And as, again, just the spring sports getting wrapped up, let everybody know what's going on around Auburn Athletics right now, too.
Yeah, you mentioned men's golf. They are in Baton Rouge right now for the NCAA Regional, currently in second place after round one with a 3-under round. Virginia has a lead at 8-under. Josiah Gilbert, Jackson Coyvan, two freshmen paced the way for the Tigers with 2-under rounds of 70. So look for them to try and move up the leaderboard and win individually. Women's golf will be playing in the NCAA Championship this upcoming weekend in Carlsbad, Florida. So that coverage will be on Golf Channel throughout the tournament. So stay on the lookout for that. But also an SEC champion in track and field, Jacoby Tharp, a freshman, won in the 110-meter hurdles. And he broke Reynaldo Nehemiah's American Junior record with a 13.18 second time. He celebrated across the finish line because he was so far ahead of the other competitors. It was a very impressive performance. And some of these sprinters that Auburn's got under head coach Louis Varell are very impressive. And They're going to have a chance at NCAA. So excited for that. And obviously, Auburn Sports Network coverage for baseball and softball this weekend. Baseball will be on Wings 94.3 here in Auburn, as well as the Auburn Tigers app. Andy Burks and Brad Law have you covered Thursday through Saturday. Reminder that it's a Thursday through Saturday series. So follow at AU Sports Network and follow myself at Jacob Hillman AU for all those details.
Awesome, man. We appreciate you and your time as always, brother. Your friendship is appreciated as well. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Talk to you guys then. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Again, with us every single Monday. Lots going on around Auburn Athletics right now. And just trophies being brought in left and right, it seems like, and going after some more as the spring sports get into postseason play and eventually wind down. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Man, we've had a lot of fun in here.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a great show today.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, good to get us both back in here. And again, we appreciate everybody that has kind of stuck with us through the last couple of weeks with getting high school sports and postseasons wrapped up. And I know you had a lot going on outside the studio, too. I mean, it was that time of year, right? And hopefully we are kind of getting that under wraps a little bit and going to be in here, I mean, every day, 2 to 4, talking all things Auburn Athletics and really getting into a lot of the conversations that we had today. Just those hypotheticals, what ifs, looking towards the future, reflecting on the past type of things. And so that's what was a lot of the show today. Talked Auburn baseball and softball, kind of recapping the weekend there. We've got SEC opponents for Auburn basketball today. We talked a lot about those, gave you our initial thoughts on what we thought that was going to be and how Auburn, I mean, if the schedule plays out and lines up in the right way, it could be a special year, at least just for the schedule for Auburn basketball next season. So,
no question.
Yeah, talked a lot about that today.
Still got two roster spots, got to fill them. I mean, you just can't roll in with blanks on your roster. I'm sorry. I don't know who you're going to get. I mean, Dior Johnson is somebody that's being looked at very heavily by Auburn and other schools. It's not just Auburn willing to take a flyer and chance on the guy. He's a heck of a talent, 6'3 point guard from Clarendon Community College, former Pitt Panther, and committed to Oregon, actually. That was a team that was looking at him. Then they had a point guard decide he was coming back, so he bolted. And then we got the four spot that everybody's talking about, still the guy Acor from Sanford may or may
Mr.
not.
Mr. Double Name, yeah.
Mr. Acorn is what I called him, a.k.a. the Squirrel is his new nickname for me if he comes to Auburn. But he's looking to come into was hoping to come down to Auburn. I'm not sure if he visited. Apparently there's an issue with his major at Sanford that Auburn doesn't offer. There's a university policy that says you have to be 80% complete to transfer in. I think it's ridiculous in this NIL world that we're even having that discussion. If a kid wants to come to Auburn and can play, make it happen, Auburn.
Which is why I say in the next handful of years, they won't be student athletes anymore. They'll be an athlete out of college. Boy, that
won't
be an
issue. Just make the sport the major and incorporate all types of things into it from finance to, you know, retirement planning to sports management to coaching. I mean, how many wonderful people can you turn out as coaches out of a football and basketball program at major universities?
Yeah,
here?
You could get a lot.
So why not just make the sport the major? I mean, aren't we done pretending? If you want a major in chemistry or organic chemistry or agriculture or whatever, more power to you. But if you don't, this is the major and this is what we're going to do.
And
we're going to have a course load for it.
Yeah, because that's where it's going. I mean, more and more, as the money grows in all levels of it, the less that they want to go and get a college degree that most of them are not going to use anyway. I mean, that's just kind of where it sits.
I mean, I got a college degree that I don't use.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm with you on that. Most 50% of people probably who get college degrees end up working in a different field than the field they got a major in. So I'm with you. I mean, I think that's an easy solution to it, and build that first true football major and all things that encompass it, from sales to marketing to whatever to management, into the major and problem solved. There you go, that? Auburn. You can put me on the payroll.
Hire Uncle T-Bone. Just don't take him from 2 to 4 because that's when we're on the air. Every single day having conversations just like that. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here with Lindsey Crosby and with Double D, Daryl Dapprich. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.